Hebrews tonight, and we're going to pick up where we left off last week there in Hebrews. And if you have your, let me get my papers straight here, if you have your study book that we're working through, I think we'll probably start off on page 314, I think is where we'll pick up tonight. So in the book of Hebrews, and then on page 314, and I'm gonna kind of give like a running start where I left off last week. Most of last week was introducing the book of Hebrews, and we didn't really get into a whole lot of the text or get into the biblical text either. So we're going to do that a lot more tonight. But remember I told you last week that probably if you were rating like the 66 books of Scripture from like the most difficult to really understand and interpret, probably Revelation would be number one, probably. But then number two most likely might be the book of Hebrews. So remember that to understand the content of this letter, you've really got to know a lot about the Old Testament sacrificial system. And if you don't or can't, you don't really have a good resource for your Old Testament, you know, the theology there, then you're looking at Hebrews thinking, why does he say that? Why does he say that? What is that supposed to mean? Well, he's writing to Jewish Christians. So he's trying to build a bridge into their lives by using their language. That's what you do. It's called evangelism, by the way, right? Paul is going to become all things to all men that by some means might win some. So he's going to become all things. And so he's trying to relate to Jewish Christians by speaking of their Jewish customs. And so a lot of Old Testament allusions are in the book of Hebrews. And that makes it hard for us, because we're not Jewish, right? Most of us didn't grow up, you know, with just the Torah and all the, you know, Old Testament like that. So it makes it harder for people like us, us pig-eating Gentiles. In fact, speaking of pig-eating Gentiles, yeah, in case you, hey, this, look, I don't work for Food Lion. I'm not making a dime off of this. But I'll tell you, I saw in an email yesterday that they had their Boston butts on sale for 99 cents a pound this week. Wow. That's half price. So if you've got a smoker or something you can cook real slow in, go to Food Lion and get you some of them Boston butts and slap them on there for Memorial Day. All right, you're welcome. That was just cool. I just throwing it out there because we're pig-eating Gentiles, right? So anyway, so let's look at the top of page 314, and let me kind of give us a running start where we left off. So at the very top of this, we do believe, based on the way he writes this, that he's probably focused on Jewish Christians, so a Jewish audience. Remember that Hebrews is the first book in what's called the general epistles, the general letters. There's not a very specific audience or recipient of these eight letters. They're more generic in their audience and outreach. So this is going to be one of those written to Jewish Christians. And I think we went through all of this last week. I said this before, that you've got to have a good grasp of the Old Testament, because Hebrews is a complicated letter and really ties in a lot with the Old Testament. And I think I left off with this last week, I think, that one of the concerns in the letter, and we saw this in chapter 2, verse 1, where the writer says, "For this reason, we must pay a much closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away." Remember, there's always, always, always a tendency to drift away in the Christian life. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It's just the way it is. And I don't know what you think, but I think it's often even just the basics of discipleship where we drift. The prayer time and prayer life starts to drift. The Bible reading time starts to drift. Our witnessing responsibilities start to drift. It's not the real big, like, outward public things. Often it's just the basics of discipleship that we start to drift away. And I think I shared last week's super brief testimony about the guy in the seminary class that pointed this out. And I've just never forgotten that. So just that caution there to be careful lest we drift away. So I think in Hebrews, because of all the intense persecution, there is going to be a tendency then to turn away from this Christian thing and just go back to Judaism. Okay, don't drift away. Don't drift back to that. And that's kind of why you've got this letter that we call Hebrews. So the very last point at the top of the page, how does the author of Hebrews encourage those Christians? I mentioned this last week, but I don't think we got to this part. So remember in the book of Hebrews, you kind of see, and you're going to see this, well, we may not get to it tonight, but you're going to find a lot that the author is going to show and try to prove that Jesus is better than. Okay, so anything you can give me from the old covenant, Jesus is better than or has fulfilled. Okay, that's part of the purpose of this letter. And you're going to see a lot of that, and I'll point it out when we get to the next page in the book. So he's going to encourage them to hold on by showing them that Jesus is better than the old covenant. So everything that were promises of the old covenant, everything that was the law in the old covenant, Jesus comes along and fulfills. Remember, he said, I didn't come to destroy the law. I came to fulfill the law. So that's what you find this writer doing. I'm going to show y'all he's better than the old covenant. He has fulfilled the old covenant. So don't turn away. Don't drift. Okay, that's kind of the book in a nutshell. So before we look at the next section, does anybody have anything you want to add or ask or share about that introduction before we look at some specifics in this letter? No comment. No complaint. We like that. So here we go. In the middle of this page, they put this heading, he's not just better, he's the best. And then we're going to see what they mean with this. So the writer says, the author of this textbook says that the author of Hebrews begins the letter by saying that in time past, God spoke to their Jewish forefathers through the prophets at many times and in many ways. That's Old Testament. He used many men and many methods to communicate his word. And then there's going to be about six examples in these verses that will give you some of the methods God used in the Old Testament as he spoke to people. Now, before we look at those, look at the very first verse of this letter called Hebrews. And again, when Paul writes a letter, it's more like, all right, Paul, an apostle called to serve, and I've got Timothy with me, greetings to you, and now to the church of Corinth. Okay, that's a typical greeting. But remember, this is not, there's no author listed here. So Hebrews just starts like this in the first verse. It's like we caught somebody in mid-thought. And he says, all right, God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. And then he goes into some Christology in verse 3 right from the start. Now, that is very different from the way Paul starts his letters. So the first verse, now look what he does. He's kind of going back to the Old Testament. It says, he spoke long ago, okay, to the fathers, so that's going to be more like patriarchs. He did it through the prophets, and it was in many portions and in many ways. So here's what we're going to do. Let's take verse 1, and let's look at some examples in the Old Testament of how God spoke in many portions and in many ways. Because this is going to be new now when Jesus comes onto the scene, a new way of speaking to people. So here's where your book is going to take us, and we're not going to look at all these verses. But these are examples from the Old Testament of how God has spoken to his people. All right, first example they give is through a dream. Now, you know, throughout the Old Testament and even into the New, it seemed that this thing called dream was a way that God would specifically speak to particular people. Now, in Genesis chapter 28, I don't expect you to know all these references. I looked them up to make sure I had it right. But this, have you ever heard of Jacob's ladder? Okay, this is that passage in Genesis 28 where Jacob has a dream. And in that dream, he sees a ladder that's reaching up into heaven. Angels are ascending and descending there. And God reinforces his promise to Jacob with the Abrahamic covenant, all that stuff. The point is, he spoke to Jacob through a dream. This is going to be building to something. Just hold on to that thought, okay? So we know he uses dreams. All right, another example. I bet you never would have guessed this one. So in the book of Numbers, he also spoke to his people through a cloud of fire. Now, what is the context there? So they build the tabernacle. They have to tear it down. They move to a location they set it back up. They tear it down, move it to a location, set it back up. And inside of that tabernacle, you'd have the entrance way into, like, you kind of get to the Holy of Holies with the mercy seat there. The blood is applied once a year. You've got the holy place. You've got a laver. Remember in Revelation we saw like that sea we talked about. You've got that laver, that basin. You've got the candlestick there. The table with the bread on it. You've got the altar of burnt offering. You've got the altar of incense. Get all these different pieces, furnishings, are inside of this tabernacle. But here's what people, you may wonder, like, if I were Moses and we're moving around through the desert, like, when do we know it's time to pack up and move? Well, here's the answer. The Bible says that basically what God would do, He would settle down upon them with a cloud of fire. And because when that cloud was lifted up, they knew it was time to pack up and move to the next location. They would follow that cloud, and that cloud would settle down. That's where they set up camp again. When the cloud was lifted up, they knew it was time to pack up and move again. So then is it in Exodus, Numbers in there? They would actually list every single place they stopped. All those times of setting up, tearing down, as they were moving through that desert and that wilderness. But what you find in that context, it says they moved at the command of the Lord. But as best we can tell, the way He spoke to them was through a cloud. Okay? So this is like, I bet if I were to ask you tonight at the start, what are some ways God spoke in the Old Testament? I doubt you would have said, oh, that's right, He commanded through a cloud in the book of Numbers. Okay, so we got a dream He would use. You've got a cloud He would use. Here's a third example. This one most of us would have guessed. There are times in the Old Testament where He just flat out spoke directly. Now, I don't know if you've got a list of questions or things you'd like to know when you get to heaven. But I've just always wondered, when God spoke to Moses face to face, like a friend would speak to a friend, like, what does that mean? What does a voice of God sound like when He's speaking to you directly? Well, in 1 Samuel, this is the account of a young kid named Samuel. And Samuel is staying with the priest named Eli. And in the middle of the night, Samuel hears a voice. And calls him, say, Samuel. Well, you know what Samuel did? He's a little boy. He got up and went to Eli. Eli, I'm here. You call me. And Eli said, I didn't call you. Get back to bed. Okay, I'm paraphrasing, okay? So he's like, okay. So he goes back to bed, and next thing he knows, hey, Samuel. He gets up again. Goes to Eli. Eli, here are you called. He's like, all right, hold on just a second. If it happens again, maybe it's the Lord speaking. Because it ain't me. So if it happens again, you answer, basically, yes, Lord, speak. Your servant is listening. Okay? So the point is, in that encounter, of course, He did speak again. It was, you know, God directly. He spoke very directly. Now, I would love to ask Samuel. I mean, I would love to ask him, Samuel, what did it sound like? I mean, is it just a human voice? Is it a rumble of thunder? Book of Revelation, the voice of God sounds like rushing waters oftentimes. So I would love to know. But the point is, sometimes He spoke directly. Okay, so we got a dream. We got a cloud. Sometimes just direct, you know, God speaking into their language. Next example. How about those occasions where God would just speak through a sign of some sort? Remember Sunday, Revelation 15, and John says, I saw another sign, right? Okay, so this is in 2 Kings, and this is a context of a king named Hezekiah. And if you recall, Hezekiah was on his deathbed, and he looks to the wall, and he prays and begs God for an extension of his life on earth. And I really don't know why. I mean, I'm not complaining per se, but I really don't know why God gave him an extension. I mean, I don't know why, you know. And he says, all right, you're a faithful dude. I'm going to give you 15 more years of life. Well, what does Hezekiah do? Basically, he's like, can you give me a sign? Like, how do I know for sure? And in that context, God says, okay. And he starts talking about a shadow on the stairs. Do you want it to like go move backward and move forward? And so Hezekiah responds to that. He's like, all right, well, this is how you'll know for sure that I've answered your prayer, and I'm going to give you 15 years of life. The point is, he uses a sign to communicate. Now, again, we're building up to something, so just hang tight. Let me get to the last two real quick. That's another example you find in the Old Testament. That's how God speaks, is specifically symbolic actions. Now, the prophet Ezekiel is where this is coming from. And Ezekiel, Wayne knows all about Ezekiel. He's in a biblical studies degree now. But Ezekiel is a difficult prophet because, can I just say it this way? I'm going to say it this way. Forgive me later. Ezekiel is weird. He's called to do some weird things. And remember we looked at Ezekiel, I gave you that handout, all those like weird, I call them weird actions that he was supposed to do. Well, in one of those cases, one of those times, and this is going to be in chapter 5, he's basically told, get yourself a really, really sharp sword and cut your hair. Or a sharp razor and cut your hair. And it's like, all right, well, I can cut, even though, I mean shave it. Like, we're talking shiny, right? So, oh, see, this is funny. We were at Ace Hardware picking up something a couple of days ago, and he acted like a manager kind of guy. He was a really friendly guy, and it was kind of funny. And somehow we talked about being outside drinking. Y'all know in this day and time you can't do this, but when I was little, the best water in the world came out of the water hose and hooked up to the side of the house. Can't do that no more. Anyway, and this guy heard us talking about it, and so he said, man, when I was little, he said, yeah, it was always just water hose, this and that. He said he rides mountain bikes all the time. And he says, sometimes the water I drink, he said, it ain't real clean and pure. And so we're talking about the water like that. And so he didn't have any hair. He's like just shaved bald. And I said, well, see, that's what happened to your hair. You drinking all that, you know, that unfiltered, dirty water. So we kind of laughed about it. But listen, this is what Ezekiel, he had probably a nice head of hair, I would assume. And God said, hey, prophet, come here for a minute. Shave off your hair. And Ezekiel did it. But here's what God told him. He said, take a third of the hair you've shaved off and burn it. I'm probably going to get this all in order. Take a third and scatter it to the wind. And I can't even remember right now the other third. But the point is, he's using this as a sign to communicate to and through Ezekiel. Okay, how did God speak in the Old Testament?
Sometimes it was a dream. Could be a cloud. A sign of some sort. A symbolic action. And Ezekiel had a lot of symbolic actions in his ministry, and some were really weird if you look at it. And then the last one, this is going to be similar to the dream with Jacob. So the poor prophet Daniel, Daniel had a difficult ministry, and I think he about had a nervous breakdown because he saw a lot of weird visions. And in those visions, Daniel would say, they were so intense, I was sick to my stomach. I couldn't even stand up. And that's how, it took a load off of him. It put a load on him. And so in one of these visions, Daniel sees a ram and sees a goat, and they're charging and carrying on. And then later, God says that, you know, one of these stands for empire coming up of Greece. One stands for Media and Persia. And all through Daniel's, all kinds of visions for like empires are going to rise up, and he's kind of laying out the future of kind of like the world going into the first century, basically the Roman Empire. And so as God communicated to Daniel, how did he do it? He did it through a vision. Now, what is all this building up to? The writer to the Hebrews says, Jesus is better than the old covenant. So whatever ways God spoke in the Old Testament, whether it is vision, dream, symbolic action, whatever it may be, then when he concludes, if you look at the bottom or right under this list, in chapter 1, verse 2, if he spoke like that in the Old Testament, then how did God speak to men later, in later or more recent days? And here is the answer. He did it through his son. Now, this, Mal, this is pivotal, right? Because he's trying to show them, look, all you've been following, and we're thankful God has spoken in these different ways. Remember in verse 1, he spoke long ago to the fathers, and the prophets, in many portions and in many ways. But here's, this is going to be kind of a gut punch for the writer. But he says in verse 2, now look, where we are today in these last days, he's spoken to us too. But it's not a dream. It's not a vision. It's not a symbolic action. He spoke to us in his Son. Do you realize what has happened? When you turn from the Old Testament Malachi, about 400 years of silence between Malachi and Matthew, when you turn to your New Testament, and now all of a sudden, God has sent his eternal Son to take on flesh, and he's speaking out through his Son, he's like, do y'all realize what's happened here? Don't drift, right? Don't turn back to your old covenant ways. Because now what we have, it's better than what you had before. Okay, visions and dreams, like, yeah, that was cool. And it looks good talking about that. But man, today, he's spoken through his Son. That changes everything. So you see that what he's building up to by trying to convince them, encourage them in persecution, do not drift from what you have heard. Okay, give me anything that stands out in those passages that you want to add to, ask about.
I found the second one interesting. How did Christ ascend into heaven? On a cloud, he's coming the same manner.
Uh-huh. There may be some parallels between the way God spoke in the Old Testament and maybe some of what Jesus fulfilled in the New. That would, you know what, Larry, when you go back to school for your master's degree, that would make a good thesis project.
I'll be in another place then.
Oh, my goodness. That would make a good thesis project. You know, I'll tell you this. My understanding is, because what I did was a doctorate of ministry, so that's different from a research degree. But my understanding is, if you did like a doctor of philosophy, like a PhD type thing, you truly have to find a topic nobody has ever written on before. And you've got to. And then you write probably several hundred pages with your book and your research and all. And that's why PhD dissertations are so weird. You've got to find something nobody has ever written on before for that type of degree. More power to you. That's what I said. So Larry, when you do your thesis project, you can do it on the old covenant, the way God spoke and how Jesus paralleled that. Anything else on that, any of that section there that stands out or interesting or something you want to add or ask about? Okay. Well, that is going to introduce a little bit of how the author is going to go about encouraging them not to drift away. So next week, we'll pick up with the back of that. And that's where it really talks about how Jesus is better than the old covenant. And I'll show you specifically next week with that. So anyway, y'all, tonight, I hope when you go to bed, I hope like Daniel, you have a vision of a goat and a ram. And they're charging each other. And one represents the kingdom of Greece and one represents the kingdom of the Medes and Persians. And you'll wake up in the morning thinking, what in the world happened to me? And it's going to be, oh, I went to church last night. That's what happened to me.